Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Missionaries in those days fully expected to die right on the field. There was abuse of all kinds.
I'm Jim Burns. Sometimes God allows us to go through incredibly painful circumstances so that later we'll be able to help others who are suffering the same kind of pain. Just ask Wes Stafford. He's the son of missionary parents who grew up serving the Lord as a boy in the jungles of Africa. But he also endured a childhood of horrific physical, emotional, and even sexual abuse that might have caused him to wonder if God really loved him or if God even existed at all. During the next half hour, we're going to hear Wes's story. Some parts of it will surprise you, some parts will shock you, but it's a powerful story of how this wounded child became a warrior for children, who now serves as the president and the CEO of Compassion International. So stay with us for an incredible Homeward program today.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Wes Stafford is with us today. We're talking about Wounded Child, Warrior for Children. Dr. Wes Stafford is the president and the CEO of Compassion International, and he has served with Compassion since 1977. He was named president in 1993. Degrees from places like Moody Bible Institute, Wheaton College, Biola, Michigan State, married for 25 years plus to Donna. They have two daughters. They live in the Colorado Springs area. Wes, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be here.
Well, I've been looking forward to it so much, and I would say to our listeners that as we have the privilege at Homeward to talk to so many wonderful Christian leaders, you know, I put you right at the top, and I appreciate your integrity, but I also appreciate your heart for kids. For years, you've been speaking up with compassion for young people, and it really is something that is near and dear to your heart, isn't it? It's not just a job for you.
It is. Well, I spent a lot of time as a child, you know, so I studied this very carefully.
Some of us did, too.
I guess, but when you think about it, we're all child experts, aren't we?
Right.
We've spent 18 years doing field
Some
research.
People actually want to forget what their childhood was like, and we'll talk about your childhood because it's very mixed up very confusing.
I have reason to be like that. I am really a product of God's grace. Yeah. I guess we all are, but when I look back on my life, you know, writing Too Small to Ignore gave me a chance to kind of turn the tapestry around. I had for years looked at the backside of the tapestry, seeing nothing but knots and tangles.
Right.
The book helped me say, you know, God's hand, even though it was a hard path, God's hand was on me.
Yeah.
And he was orchestrating. I guess I was Compassion's president in training when I was 5 years old.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? You know, it's interesting because I just finished, as I was telling you before the program, reading your book, Too Small to Ignore. And in doing that, I thought, you know what? He had the perfect life to be the president for Compassion. I mean, you were a missionary kid raised in Africa. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm pretty sure when I was born, that God and the angels must have looked at what was created there in my mama's womb and said, he's not a rocket scientist. We're going to have to make it pretty clear what he's to do with his life. And so God allowed me to be raised in a missionary family in a tiny little remote village in the Ivory Coast of West Africa, a poverty-stricken place. My sister and I were like the only white children for a day's drive in any direction. And I literally had my primary values, the things that I still really drive my life off of, I learned from the poor in that little village. I don't even, for instance, when many people, when they think of poor, think sort of downward toward the poor. I don't. Not even subtly do I think downward. I think upward. And they taught me the things that that I think really made the fabric of who I am.
What were some of the things they taught you?
Well, they taught me that no matter how poor you are, there's always love. And we were a very loving community. There were times that love is all we had to give to one another. I had little friends, I can remember, that we were a day's drive from the nearest hospital. And we had snakes. We had vipers in our village that could kill in 30 minutes. And I can remember a little one of my friends who was bitten by a viper. And I was 6 years old myself. He was five. I killed that snake and then sat under the mango tree and rocked my little friend in my arms because there was nothing that could be done but to love him literally to death. Mm. They taught us about love. You, no matter how poor you are, you can receive it and you can give it. They taught us joy. That joy is a decision that you make. It's not dictated by circumstances. Hope, same thing with hope. it's not dictated by circumstances. They taught me how to be generous, how to give, and how to receive. They taught me that time is your servant, not your master. They taught me if you're courageous, that that's not for you. That's for you to be there for those who are frightened. And if you're strong, it's not about you either. It's for you to be there for those who are weak. I can remember African men hoeing in their fields, and the widow has her field on the other side. And these men would go right across the footpath into her field and be doing her field. And when she would look up and say, hey, you're in my field, they would all laugh and be apologetic. Whoops, sorry, we lost our place. But they had done something incredibly kind because they were stronger than she was. And they'd done it in a way to preserve her dignity. All of those values I now use to lead a very compassionate organization called Compassion.
You know, I have goosebumps when you said that because you learn so much, and yet today's kid in North America, today's kid has a tough time learning any of those values.
Well, we fight an uphill stream in this country. The media, everything pulls down like gravity away from our core values. But you know the reason for the goosebumps? Because deep in your heart, you absolutely fundamentally know that's true. That's the thing with the book was I was trying to resurrect in American Christians, for the most part. This is not too late. If we will do a bit of a paradigm shift, if we're willing to paddle upstream a bit, we can provide for our children this kind of loving, nurturing environment. But they have to be considered more important than they're being considered.
Right. You know, it's interesting because Jesus said, you know, when you welcome a child, you welcome me.
Absolutely.
And yet for many of us, we don't understand that concept, or we forget that Jesus actually said that.
Yeah, he said that. And then in Matthew 25, he followed up on the thought and he said, literally, whatever you do for one of these little ones, you do for me. Right. What he meant was you do literally to me. You didn't do this on my behalf in some philanthropic way. He's saying that was me in the form of that suffering person, that little Ugandan child, that little boy on the street near your home.
You know, when you say that, it reminds me of two things. One is what an incredibly high calling as a dad and as a mom for your own children. But it also reminds me that we've got some compassionate children. You know, they're right now on our refrigerator. Actually, the children aren't in the refrigerator, but you know, there they are. And our kids pray for them, and it's a part of our routine, our life.
Yes.
That calling is an incredibly huge calling because of the scripture that you just said, both as parents, but also loving the children who may not have the privilege that at least the Burns children have or the Stafford children have.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I believe it's one of the most sacred and profoundly Christian things we can do. And like I say, we're all child experts. You don't need to go out and get a PhD in this. You know, you've done 18 years of field research. We know what it feels like done well, and we know what it feels like done poorly.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say to the Sunday school teachers, to pastors, to the Christian community across the world is we have them right in front of us right now. A child's life is like, the spirit's like wet cement. It takes no effort now to make an impact on their lives, for good or bad, if we will understand what a priority they are in the kingdom of God. I think it's Proverbs 31 says, so speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and what's amazing about that is Compassion does such an incredible job with that. Listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your life. You were raised in Africa. You went to a boarding school, and things didn't work out very well. There was some real abuse, and we want to hear about that. Yeah. We'll be right back. Dr. Wes Stafford is with us. What a privilege to have him with us today. We're talking about a wounded child, a warrior for children. That's his life. But we're also talking about the fact that you as an individual and as a family can make a difference in the lives of kids, your kids, but also kids all around this world.
And how we appreciate the Ministry of Compassion International here at Homeward. And today on the Homeward broadcast, you're listening to parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns talking with Compassion's president, Wes Stafford, about his experience as a wounded child who's now a warrior for children. And if you've ever been to one of the Homeward seminars, we do hundreds of these all across the country. We've got a number of different speakers who speak for Homeward, including Dr. Jim Burns and Doug Fields and others. But there's a presence at each of those seminars from Compassion International, and there's a reason for that, and it's because of the partnership that we share, but also the outstanding work that Compassion International does. And if you want to learn more about Compassion, go to our Homeward website today and you'll find a link through Wes's name to Compassion International. You can learn more about the outstanding work that they do. Also, if you'd like a copy of today's broadcast, an audio CD, just drop us a line, include a gift of any amount when you write to Homeward. Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, where the swallows go, the zip code 92693, and we will rush you your CD today.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Today, Dr. Wes Stafford, what a privilege. President, CEO of Compassion International. As I said earlier, this is an organization that I count as one of the key organizations in the world today, doing great and glorious things. I've seen it. I've been in Ecuador, where they do great work. They do great work around the country. They do great work around the world. And what a privilege to have him with us today. Wes, you have quite a story, and your parents really loved you and your sister, but you weren't actually with them much when you were growing up, at least part of the time, because you were away at school. Is that right?
Yeah. My childhood from about age six was divided into two places each year. We've talked about the fact that 3 months of the year was in the loving embrace of a very gentle, poverty-stricken, but a very gentle community, which ultimately shaped most of my values. But back in these days, this is back in the 50s and early 60s, there was no option. There was no school in our village, for example, until later on. So all of the missionary children were basically sent to one school all the way across the country. It was about almost an 800-mile drive to this school. It took us a week to drive that. I mean, we had to build bridges and chase baboons off the road, you know, to get to the place. Consequently, we didn't go home for 9 months. No parents ever came through to see us during 9 months. And the thing that was tragic, I mean, boarding school is hard enough for the separation from your parents. But the sad thing in this case, and I didn't name the school in the book, I thought, you know, enough is enough. I don't need to drag everybody through this again. The tragedy, as I look back on it, was that the people who were responsible for that school, they were American missionaries, but they didn't go to Africa to take care of missionary children. They went to Africa to save African lost and build the kingdom. I don't know how decisions were made. I don't know whether they didn't do it linguistically or cross-culturally or what, but they wound up, instead of being sent home or something, they wound up being given the lowest priority job you could have, and that's take care of children.
Which is just amazing.
That's right.
When our listeners hear this story and you yeah. say, wait, these people are taking care of the children of incredible men and women who are doing great
sacrificing their lives on behalf right. of the... Yeah, I mean, missionaries in those days fully expected to die right on the field. These were people who were, first of all, not called to work with children. Secondly, weren't trained to work with children. And thirdly, didn't want to work with children. This was the lowest priority. And there they were with no real authority over them. And they had full reign over about 80 of us. And it was a reign of complete terror. There was abuse of all kinds, beatings. The place was just a cacophony of children crying and calling out for mercy and comforting one another. There seemed to be a reason for beatings, you know, virtually every day. I finally, when I was 9 years old, that's about fourth grade, and that's when they're teaching you how to average stuff in math class. I thought, so what's the most reoccurring thing in my life? I know. How many times do they beat me in this place? And so I kept under my pillow a little tally for several weeks and then did the average, did the math, and I discovered that I was being beaten 17 times a week. Mm. Not 17 swats, but 17 occasions to be beaten. And they didn't hit you with a gentle little thing. It was a huge tire, a slipper made out of a truck tire tread or a belt. So there was a great deal of fear, a great deal of abuse. We were spiritually, physically, emotionally, and even sexually abused.
And at this point, this went on, and you were unwilling to tell all this to your parents at the beginning.
We didn't tell our parents, and this is one of the most diabolical things of it all. We wrote letters every week. Jim, I to this day, it's hard for me to put a pen on a paper, because every week we wrote letters. But they warned us, and this was the most amazing thing, and child psychologists understand this now, but they warned us, if you tell your parents what's going on here, you will be Satan's tool to destroy their ministries. They used to say it, I can hear it ringing in my ears, there will be Africans in hell because of you.
Right.
And so 80 of us children, we told them, our parents, about bike hikes and walks through the forest and the jungle. And we never told them about the hurt and the pain in our lives. We didn't while we were at school, and we didn't for the 3 months that we were home. We loved them too much.
Isn't that amazing? Now, they had something called the bad news list. What was that?
That was a good reason to get beaten. I mean, you're 6 years old. While you're up at school in the morning, house parents would go through the rooms as if this was West Point or something. 6 years old, you had to be able to make your bed without a wrinkle.
I'd be in trouble today.
Yeah, you're dead meat, just like I was. And one of the reasons why, you know, I'm thin today, I they took away the joy of eating, because at the end of the lunch hour, he would ring this little claw bell and lean back in his chair with this measure of glee and say, "And now the bad news list." And he would read, you know, Wes Stafford, pair of socks under the bed, a wrinkled rug, dust in the dresser. And I could do the math. I thought, oh my, that's four major hits I'm going to get. Socks is two things, you know, rug, dust. And then at the end of this, those of us who were guilty that day, and it could be 20 or 30 of the kids in the place, we would line up like Judgment Day outside the house parents' room. We would walk in. They would read our charges. We would bend over and grab our ankles so as to be just as tight across the seat of our pants as we could get. They would read our charges like Judgment Day and just whack on us as hard as they could. We just screamed in pain. And then off we went to noon rest, where you couldn't get caught for an hour with your eyes open. They patrolled the halls there. It seemed like there was a cat and mouse game of what can we do to make life miserable for these little ones.
Right. It's just a horrible story. And actually, the story gets more horrible. I'm actually on this second program. I'm going to have you tell the end of that. I want to kind of almost interrupt the story today because this was happening to you, and yet you have an incredible heart for children. And I have been to compassion places, and I've been to schools, and there is great love, and there is incredible nurture, and God's presence is in there. I feel it when I'm there. I mean, how did you move from being a kid who was getting slapped like crazy and just, you know, horrible abuse to being someone who speaks up for children all around the world?
Well, there is a line of logic, actually, when you realize to whom much is given, much is required. I think that's much more than money. I think some of that is heart. Heart. Some of it is insight. Some of it's experience. I know, Jim, because of the village where I lost half of my boyhood friends to poverty, I know poverty. I know more than the statistics. I know who dies. I also know abuse. All levels of abuse, every way a child can get damaged. I was damaged. And I actually was completely destroyed. I mean, I didn't speak in those days. If I spoke at all, my lips didn't move. If I wrote, you couldn't tell one letter from the next. When ultimately they were screaming in my face, "Enunciate, you little idiot!" I used to think, why should I? Nobody cares. Who would care what I have to say? The thing that finally turned it around for me was when I finally came to America about age 15. I thought back on the harshness, the cruelty, the abuse, and I thought, you know what, they stole my childhood, but I don't have to give them my whole life. And I chose at age 17, sitting around a campfire at a camp, a talk about forgiveness. And I chose to forgive them, even though I knew they would never ask forgiveness. It wasn't a high, noble level of forgiveness. Essentially, what I said is, I choose to leave you behind. I am not going to allow you to define the rest of my life. And once I had that tenderness of forgiveness to these people, and by the way, they never have asked forgiveness, even though they formally have been found guilty, never bothered to apologize to any of us. But I can now look at all of that experience and I can see my heart was being shaped, my spirit was being shaped to uniquely champion the cause of kids. I know basically how children can be hurt, and yet I know their incredible value. I know how they can be rescued. And God raised me, I think, to be an advocate for children from a path of great, great pain. It's part of my qualifications, I guess.
That is incredible. And you know what? And all of us can be advocates for children. When I watch a television program and they say "to be continued," it sometimes bugs me. But actually, the story gets worse before it gets better. Your mom became ill, and how they treated you during that time was amazing. And we're going to do that next time. I've actually had goosebumps as we've been talking, and I'm thinking about that particular story. So our listeners are going to have to wait till next time and follow that.
I waited 35 years. I never talked about this. I tried to leave it behind.
It is such a tender story, and we hope that you have been blessed, that your heart has been touched by what you've been hearing in the conversation today here on the Homeward Broadcast from the studios of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. You've been listening to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns, who is also the executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family here at APU. Jim's special guest has been Wes Stafford, who is the president of Compassion International, and our theme today has been Wounded Child, Warrior for Children. When you hear Wes Stafford talk about that story he just referred to about how it's been 35 years in the developing of coming forward with his story of abuse at the hands of missionaries and people who should have been on his side. We encourage you to stay with us for the next edition of the program, where we'll hear the conclusion of this broadcast. And Jim, the more than 10 years that you and I have been working together on this program and in ministry and media, I think this has to be one of the most difficult stories that we've ever presented here on Homeward.
You know what? It is very emotional. I'm emotional right now. Just as I think about what Wes went through. For one thing, seeing what Wes does, I mean, he's one of the most incredible advocates for children in the world today.
Yeah.
I have great respect for Compassion International. In fact, we sponsor kids, as we've talked about here.
Right.
But also, just for who they are, what they do, I've seen them in action. And to not know that whole story until today, and actually we'll continue it. There's the story gets actually stronger next time.
It gets worse before it gets better.
But it really is a powerful story. And really what I see in Wes's life, as we kind of experienced his physical, sexual, spiritual abuse, emotional abuse, is an incredible heart for kids. We mentioned this, but when Jesus said, when you welcome a child, you welcome me, I mean, that's the call of every, I believe, Christ follower, because we want to have the heart of God. We want to imitate Christ in some ways. And one of the ways we can do that and really be his hands and his feet and his mouthpiece is to take care of children.
Amen.
And so I hope that people will do what the Burns family has done and sponsor children who are poor and who are oppressed and make a difference in one kid's life. And if enough people would do that, well, that would change the world in many ways. I also hope, not just outside the United States, but that inside the United States, there are a lot of children who are hurting. And it may be a neighbor. It may be a nephew. It may be someone who you know from church, but I want to challenge all of our listeners to really consider this story and then say, Lord, what can I do to be an advocate for children? I know some people who probably will want to sign up as Sunday school teachers. I know some who will want to be big brothers and big sisters. I know some who really do want to make a difference in the lives of children. So practically speaking, literally, look for ways to serve children. And then in doing that, you're going to be imitating the love of Christ.
When you think about your stewardship, even in your local church congregation, we always talk about time, talent, and treasures. And stewardship to many people, of course, means writing a check. But as Dr. Jim Burns has just stressed here on today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast, to make sure that you invest of your time and your talents too, especially as it pertains to kids, because that's the future. And that's a place where we can really pass on our faith. If you want to see the legacy of faith continue from one generation to the next, that's why Homeward is here, to equip you as a parent or as a grandparent or adult leader. Go to homeward.com. And check out the resources that we have, especially those pertaining to building a spiritual legacy. We've got audio resources. Jim's book, Faith Conversations for Families, is available for purchase. But go online today to homeward.com and check out those resources.
Well, Homeward is committed to encouraging parents and building families all over the world, and your prayers and your financial support help make that possible. You can make your contribution today by going online to homeward.com, and we will do our very best to steward that money to make a difference in the lives of families. Be sure to tune in next time when I'll conclude my conversation with Wes Stafford. He has an amazing story of overcoming a childhood of emotional, physical, sexual, and even spiritual abuse to become the president and the CEO of Compassion International. It's going to be a great program. Please don't miss it. Till then, I'm Jim Burns. Appreciate you listening today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.